After the first exuberance had worn off, we remembered that Aunt Millicent was 74 and an eccentric dresser. But to be left anything at all gives one a lift. The lawyers wrote asking us to come to London and pack the clothes ourselves. They said they would pay all expenses. Mr. Stebbins lent Stephen his car to drive us to the station, and even the horse seemed to be enjoying himself. We got to Scotney Station in good time. Stephen kept begging me to be careful of the traffic. He even ran along with the train to remind me again. Then he stood waving, smiling, but a bit wistful-looking. It struck me that never in his life has he been to London. I had hoped the lawyer's office would be old and dark, with a Dickensy old lawyer, but it was just an ordinary office, and we only saw a clerk who was young, with very sleek hair. He asked us if we could find our way to Chelsea by bus. "No," said Rose quickly. "Okay, take a taxi." I said we were a little short of change. Rose flushed scarlet. He gave her a quick look, then said, "Wait a sec," and left us. He came back with £4. "Mr. Stevenage says you're to have this," he told us. "It'll take care of your fares. Taxi to Chelsea, taxi to get the stuff to the station, and a slap-up lunch. And you must nip back here with the key of the house and sign a receipt. See?" We said we saw, and went. Rose was furious that no one more important than a clerk had bothered to see us. "It's not respectful to Aunt Millicent," she said indignantly, "treating us like small fry." I didn't mind what kind of fry I was with £4 in hand. The lily pond was dry in Aunt Millicent's little flagged garden. I hoped the goldfish had found good homes. We unlocked the front door. "It does feel queer," I said when the door was closed and the sunny day shut out. "It only feels cold," said Rose. "I suppose the clothes will be in her bedroom. I wonder if she died there." I thought it a tactless thing to wonder out loud. There was nothing in the big front bedroom, much to my relief, though I can't say it felt as if anyone had died there, merely cold and empty. The clothes were in the little back dressing room, lying in heaps on the floor, with two old black leather trunks for us to pack them in. "Rose, I don't think I can touch them." "We've got to," she said, and started to rummage through them. And then we heard someone coming upstairs. I went icy cold from my heart up to my shoulders. Then the fear got into my throat so that I couldn't speak. I just stared at Rose in agony. It isn't, she gasped. "Oh, Cassandra, it isn't." But I knew that she thought it was. And I knew, in the way I so often know things about Rose, that she had been frightened ever since we entered the house, that the casual way she handled the clothes had been all bluff. But I didn't know then that she was doubly frightened, that she thought if it wasn't Aunt Millicent coming up the stairs, it was a tramp who had been hiding in the basement, that he would kill both of us and put our bodies in the trunks. Oh, wonderful Rose! With both these fears in mind, she flung open the door and said, "Who's there?" The lawyer's clerk stood outside. "How dare you?" she cried furiously, "sneaking into the house, terrifying my little sister." "Don't, Rose," I said in a weak voice. The poor clerk apologized profusely. "And I only came to do you a good turn," he finished. Then he handed her a letter. Rose read it. "But we can't pay this." I snatched it from her. It was a reminder that money was owing for the cold storage of some furs. "You don't have to pay anything. I fixed that by phone," said the clerk. "Those are your furs now. They must be good uns if she paid out all that to store them. Tell you what, you shove all this stuff in the trunks and I'll take them down to the station. Leave them in the left luggage office for you, see? And you cut along for the furs." We bundled the clothes in hurriedly. I am ashamed to say I forgot about Aunt Millicent's dead feelings. The clerk and his taxi driver dragged the trunks downstairs. Then he got another taxi for us, and he shouted after us, "He's hoping they're Sables!" We hoped so, too.